drones, rapid advancements in aerial remote sensing technologies for agriculture.
Okay, good morning. Thanks for having me out here. Appreciate it. This is a cool conference. I wish I could have. I've been out of town the past couple days. I wish I could have been to some more of this. It's an impressive group of folks, and there's a lot of stuff going on here. So, again, I'm Todd Colton. I'm the Chief Aerospace Engineer at Centerra. And Centerra is a company based here in Minnesota in the Twin Cities, and we're building upon an accomplished legacy of people and products to develop sensors, software, and drones for commercial applications and some other commercial applications, in particular agriculture. I've been lucky enough to work doing drones or unmanned aircraft for almost 15 years now, so I'm in our industry, I'm a veteran. It's pretty new, right? But I'm going to go over a lot of sort of some of the history here. I've been lucky enough to work with a group of folks of really talented engineers and scientists for a bunch of years, and we sort of traveled together. We all started at a big aerospace company called Lockheed Martin, developing drones for the military. And in the past couple of years, we've kind of moved out, working into commercial drones and agriculture. And earlier this year, we had an opportunity to take some of the intellectual property, some of the products and designs that we developed previously, and bring those to market kind of commercially. And so we took some of those technologies, and we started a new company called Centerra, and we're off developing products for agriculture. So I'm going to talk about some of our software and sensors that we're developing. I'm going to do a really quick drone history lesson to kind of give people a perspective of maybe where some of this came from, and talk a little bit about where we are today in the industry on the commercial side. So Centerra, as I said, we're veterans in the drone industry. Collectively, we've got about 20 employees now, so we're still a small company, but we're growing. Over 200 years of collective experience in remote sensing and unmanned aircraft. A lot of us have got pedigrees at Fortune 500 companies like Lockheed Martin, United Technologies, even Target Corporation. And a lot of folks have come out of the ag industry as well. We're FAA approved to operate drones. We just recently got our Section 333 and COAs approved. And we're in the process of registering with the state of Minnesota right now. And all told, going back over the history, 20,000 hours of total flight time just with unmanned aircraft. So in the past 2 years, our drones and our sensors have taken 15 million photographs, primarily of corn and soybeans, mapped 24,000 square miles, which is more than most small states, 12,000 hours of flight time, 200 gigabytes of data, tons of data. So our sensors have been out there. We've been imaging corn and soybeans and other crops at a big scale. And so there's not many others that have done that. So we've learned a lot along the way. And one of the important things we've learned is, what do you do with all this data? How do you scale that? So we've developed a product called Centerra Ag Vault, which is a desktop software application that automatically organizes images by place and time. So when you're off flying a farm field, when you get done, you download all your images, whether you're transferring an SD card or with some of our sensors, it's all wireless, it happens automatically. And since there's a GPS on board and a navigation system, we know exactly where those pictures were taken and when. So it automatically imports those, puts icons on the map. When you click on one of those icons, you see all the pictures that were taken on that day at that field, organized in a way. And each image has all the data associated with that image, exactly where it was in the field, et cetera. And then these images can easily be imported into other analytical tools. But there's a kind of a simple, easy-to-use database that's automatically populated. It's a real hands-off process. So this is what we think is needed in the industry once you start doing this on a big scale. Even if you're doing it on a small scale, I'm sure those of you in the room who have done this, you realize you get hundreds, sometimes thousands of pictures of a farm field. Data starts to, you know, where did I put that SD card? It just dies. It gets lost. You named it something, you're not sure what it was. We're trying to help make that, automate all that for you. We're also developing sensors that are kind of tightly integrated, so it's kind of a complement, the software that helps categorize and store all your data, but also some specialized lightweight multispectral cameras, particularly for agriculture. So we've got what we call the single, which is a wideband NDVI or multispectral camera. It's the smallest, lightest weight NDVI camera on the market. We have a double camera, which is two of those. One is an RGB, like a color camera, and the other is a near-infrared or an NDVI camera. So you get both, you take two pictures in a single overflight. So you're essentially doubling the speed of how you're collecting your data instead of having to fly twice with two different cameras. And we have a quad band sensor, which is kind of a narrow band multispectral camera. So here you're looking at up to four different very specific narrow bands of reflected light. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later. This is an example of some NDVI imagery. This is some strawberries that we flew over. I think today you're going to see lots of pictures of aerial imagery and stuff that a lot of the researchers in the room are doing, so I'm not going to go too much in detail into all this, other than NDVI is Normalized Difference Vegetation Index. It's just an index where you take different wavelengths of light, in particular near-infrared and red, run it through a formula, normalize it, and you can build sort of a color map that has to do with gives you an indication of crop health or, in particular, biomass. Here's some images from that narrowband multispectral camera. This is sort of a different, an idea of what you can get when you're looking at narrowband multispectral, which is different than NDVI. So there's four images that we synchronously captured. We have some researchers who are using these cameras right now, and they're going to publish some pretty exciting results here this winter. And we're under NDA and the rest, so I can't go into all the details of that particular project, but this is something that are able to share publicly right now. The idea is that in the upper left, that's a normal full-spectrum RGB, and then we've got three very narrow-band images. The upper right, you can see, this is some maybe July corn, but just to the north of that, or just to the top edge of the image, you can see little dark black patches really popping out of the grass that's up there. Turns out those are some weeds and clover in particular. They don't show up so much on the 700 nanometers, but then at 730 nanometers, which is where you're getting right into full near infrared, they show up again kind of clear as day. And you notice there's a lot of noise in some of those other images, but in the far infrared, or I'm sorry, in the near infrared at 730 nanometers, it's a nice clean image. So sometimes we talk about signal to noise and, you know, what type of data or what type of content is in the image and how are you going to analyze it and pull out the data. This is the type of thing you can do with when you're looking at very narrow band wavelengths. On the drone side, on the aircraft side, since Sentara's sort of taken the approach, if we can't beat them, let's join them. So this is a DJI Phantom 3. For those of you that aren't familiar with DJI or the Phantom 3, this is the drone that you see on the news all the time now. When they talk about drones. This is the drone that probably was flying up over the bridge that Cassandra mentioned earlier, but it might have been something else too. But this is the one that they're selling tons of, and we'll talk about that more later. But since this is so widely used now, we said, hey, why don't we take one of our cameras, NDVI cameras, and mount it right on that Phantom. Since our camera's so small and lightweight, those are soybean kernels down there. So we've got a package now that you can get an NDVI capability. It'll tie in GPS and do aerial mapping for, you know, basically the cost of that drone is $1,500 and our camera's maybe $2,000 or something like that. So as a total package, it's a pretty affordable way to get into it. I want to this is changing gears a little bit. Let's just talk about some history of drones. I thought with this audience, maybe it isn't so much aerospacey. It's more ag-focused, so go over a few different things that, you know, Cassandra mentioned it earlier. Drones have been around, or unmanned aircraft have been around, for pretty much the entire history of aviation. So the first real official drone was done in 1918, almost 100 years ago, in Dayton, Ohio. It was called the Kettering Bug. So on the tail end of World War I, it was a radio-controlled aircraft, full-size aircraft, no pilot on board. It was designed not to come back. They called it an aerial torpedo. But that's kind of where a lot of this really started. So they've been thinking about it since the very beginning. In World War II, there were some kind of goofy experiments with sticking pigeons inside guided bombs with wings, and they would try to fly to a target. In the 60s, there was something called the Lockheed D-21 drone. And this is by no means a comprehensive history. This is just showing you the progression of all along we've had. The drone technology has been in existence. This is something that not a lot of people knew about. This was super highly classified for 30 years. But this aircraft could fly, you know, almost Mach 4, faster than any other aircraft around. it would overfly Russia and China and the rest and take images. So it was a super secret spy drone back in the 60s. In the 70s, we had something called the Firebee that was used in Vietnam. Again, an unmanned aircraft that would fly around and do imaging. In the 80s, the military started looking at cheap drones, taking some of this model aircraft technology, say, hey, maybe we can make some small, cheap drones. And so the X-Drone is something they did back then, and that was used throughout the 80s and even into the first Gulf War. So again, a lot of this was all pushed by the military kind of over the last 100 years. In the 90s, the military really started to look at drones as the future and started to invest in lots of different projects. And then in the late 90s, something different happened, something special happened. So a confluence of technologies kind of came together, and they were commercial technologies at this point. They came together and they caused a big revolution in what you could do with drones, and in particular small drones. And those things are car engine sensors, automotive engine sensors, like accelerometers, gyroscopes, other sensors were starting to be like MEMS, right, micro electromechanical machines, that they started being mass-produced and were affordable. GPS started to become widely available. There was a thing called selective availability that it still exists, although they turned it off in the 90s and they haven't turned it back on since. And that was where the Department of Defense used to inject some errors in the GPS signal, so you didn't really know where you were, right? You'd be off by 100 feet or more. You knew generally where you were, but not accurately. They turned that off, and suddenly GPS could be a useful tool for navigating aircraft, and particularly small aircraft. And cell phones. Cell phones were everywhere, but small batteries, small processors, small cameras. Cell phones really drove that. So that caused, or that enabled, some really rapid development in small UAVs throughout the 2000s. And we kind of, in this country, got entangled in a couple wars that really pushed that along a lot as well. But it was really that the late 90s, the availability of that technology that suddenly made small drones possible. So where are we today? That was the history lesson. Now where are we now? So there's a second revolution happening. We're about 20 years later, or not quite, 15, 20 years later from when a lot of that technology suddenly became commercialized. And so now drone technology in general is starting to become commercialized. So like a lot of those other technologies, the internet in general, computers, GPS, all that stuff, originally was a military-type technology that commercialized. Drones are now starting to show up on the farm, right? So talking about the commercial market, this is a chart I like to show. This chart was put out in 2012 by AUVSI. AUVSI is the Association of Unmanned Vehicle Systems International. Us in the drone industry or the unmanned aircraft industry, that's the big trade organization. They've been around for a while. So in 2012, they came out and said, hey, we think drones might be, they might go commercial. You know, this might be the next big wave. But it's been traditionally military for, well, really 100 years, but really throughout the 2000s, it was big. The next step is obviously going to be commercial. So they said, well, we think the number of UAS sales, it probably won't start going commercial until about 2015, which is the bottom axis there is years. The top or the vertical axis is number of UAS sales or number of drone sales. So in 2015, they thought that it would categorize into, it'd be big in agriculture. That's the big red swath there. And a little skinny swath of public safety or law enforcement. And another skinny swath at the bottom, the green of other. So everybody was really excited about that. We thought that selling 40,000 drones in 2015 would be pretty exciting 3 years ago. So, and then the overall prediction was going to be a $2 billion commercial UAS or drone market by 2020, right? Which is still 5 years out from now, and it was 8 years out from there. So here's the actual commercial market today, right? So again, this was only 3 years ago we did this prediction. So what has happened in the last 3 years? I squished down that chart, right? So here's the chart, squished it down, the prediction, and here's where we actually are. And so there's that big green triangle. Remember, the green sliver at the bottom is the other. So the other is like consumer drones, right? So that has just exploded. It's going to be more than a million sold this year. That's a lot where the FAA prediction. But that's real. I mean, it's November. There's already been more than a million drones sold worldwide this year. And the actual market size this year, commercial market size this year is $2 billion. So it is growing very fast. So when we're looking at, when Sentara, we're sort of looking at, okay, how is this going to map to agriculture? Turns out that the bottom, where I squished that down, the prediction for agriculture is still pretty close. They're talking about 40,000 drones being used in 2015 for agriculture worldwide. That's probably about right. A lot of them are these smaller, lower-cost quadcopters that people are using for scouting, but there's aerial mapping and precision agriculture uses as well. So we looked at this report we found was really interesting. This was a 2003 paper out of Purdue, and they looked at various precision agriculture technologies and what have been the adoption rates over the last decade. So starting in 2004 through 2013 is where this data is from. So this is survey data from real sales outlets. And I'm not going to go through in detail all this, but I circled three of them in the middle here. The green line is GPS guidance with auto control, basically auto steer. The purple and light blue are field mapping, aerial mapping, and satellite mapping, essentially. And those are the three lines on this chart that are growing the fastest over the last decade in terms of adoption rates. With GPS tractors, I mean, the adoption rate now is quite high, you know, 70% or something like that. So it whereas 10 years ago, it was almost nothing, or it was very low, you know, it was the early adopters. So we think that the use of drones in agriculture is going to follow a similar trend to what these technologies have done in the past 10 years. And it isn't, you know, we're not basing that just on we hope that it's going to be like this. There's actually examples that have shown this to be true. So, and a lot of you may be very familiar with this, but some may not. So in Japan, they've been using drones in agriculture for more than 20 years. That's a remote pilot of the helicopter. It's a little bit bigger. It's maybe a couple hundred pounds, a 10-foot rotor span. And there's a pilot there that's remotely operating it. It's still GPS controlled. It's fairly autonomous. And they use it to spray pesticides in rice fields. And here's the actual historical data over the last 20 years of the adoption rate of this technology, of drone technology in Japan, from Yamaha. So going back to actually 25 years ago, 1990, when they first started, and it's a nice, you know, typical technology adoption rate curve that you would expect in any industry. And they get up to, they're using something like 2,500 registered aircraft in Japan right now. And the final sort of conclusion, the final point to make on this is that that number of aircraft and the number of acres that are being flown from a few years ago represent 20% of all farmed acres in Japan. So not just rice fields or rice paddies. So it is mature. You can even see the curve is starting to plateau out there, but it's used at a very large scale and has been for a long time. So that's sort of the conclusion. Thanks for your time. The last thought I want to leave with you is that there's going to be some interesting talks here about a lot of the bleeding edge, front edge research that's going on using unmanned aircraft and aerial imagery in agriculture. And the market is here, and the market is, like, all this work is very useful, and it's all going to find a home because it, you know, the commercial market is starting to happen. It's starting to take off. So thanks a lot.